Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend's edition. We're going to be covering a lot of the moves in the markets. Unfortunately, some downward moves that we are seeing again in markets and metals, as well as some of the macro factors that I think we all need to just understand what continues to drive these markets and why the Fed might keep on hiking. But again, that still just continues to be a moving target. We are kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, I want to start with a quick recap of this Q3 earnings season that we are still fairly early on in. We've had a number of banks report, and those overall reports have been much stronger than estimated or anticipated, as well as even Netflix. As we're recording this, they came out with an earnings report that was a bit better than analysts expected. This flies a little bit in the face of a lot of what we were hearing early on this year, and honestly, even right before Q3 earnings season, where a lot of analysts were saying this will be the earnings season where companies really start to get hit, and even companies were warning before this earnings season that, look, things are getting tougher for them. It just seems like this economy doesn't seem to be falling flat on its face as quickly as some of the other commentators think it will. Jesse, what's your takeaway so far from this Q3 earnings season and how it ties into the bigger picture for the economy in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, honestly, I was one of those people that had been, warning about an earnings recession due to a number of factors, whether it's, small business surveys that point to deteriorating margins or just, the macro factors of rising dollar, rising interest rates, rising oil prices is usually a good 2-year lead on corporate earnings. That also suggests, too, that it takes time to play out, right? We're seeing those macro dynamics really scream that, earnings recession is coming, but it does take, like I said, it's a 2-year lead, so it takes time. I think, what the banks are saying is the consumer is still really healthy. They don't see any, I think that's kind of the consensus we're hearing from CEOs and CFOs right now is that they really don't see any signs of a significant slowdown just yet. Consumers, the banks have pointed out consumers still have cash in their bank accounts, more cash than they had pre-pandemic, and plenty of credit available. And so I think, the pandemic fiscal stimulus is still having an effect and bolstering consumer finances. At the same time, I think, it's important to point out that companies, we've seen, my friend Jonathan Tepper has pointed out, he wrote a book a couple years ago on the topic of, the concentration across industries in the economy. We've seen it, not just in tech and the massive, buyouts. You've seen Google and Facebook and companies have literally made dozens and dozens of acquisitions every year, consolidating the industry. But in every industry, we've seen this. And so that consolidation dampens competition, and it means that it's possible for these companies to raise prices probably more than they otherwise would be. So I think that's also part of what's going on here. With inflation running so hot, companies are able to raise prices and, paired with the lack of competition, able to raise prices pretty much at will so far. Especially, with healthy consumer balance sheets, there hasn't been a ton of pushback so far, and their costs have not risen quite as fast as the top line growth. And so that's kind of helped margins to, stay relatively strong, and in fact, incredibly strong so far. But I do think if you start to see weakness at the top line, consumers start to push back and costs continue to stay high, that's when you have to start worrying about margins, and it might be a 2023 story.
Jesse, it's interesting you say that, because what we heard at the beginning of the year and even at the end of last year was that the consumers were in trouble because their credit card debt was going up. They were living off home equity lines of credit, that they were eating their savings. But if the banks are reporting that there's more cash in their bank accounts now than pre-pandemic, and the consumers have been amazingly strong, look at the retail numbers to prove that. The question will be, at what point do they feel the pinch? And if it's a next year situation, do you think it's going to be tied into wage growth? And how will that wage growth, if it does happen, impact companies and their future earnings reports?
Well, we're still seeing wage growth hit, 5-6% year over year. It's still below the inflation rate, which is a problem for consumers, right? Negative real earnings growth is not a good trend. And it's why I think we are seeing people, the lowest end of, the consumer spectrum really struggle with rapidly rising rents and, pay rising not fast enough. I can't remember which bank it was. It might have been JP Morgan or B of A pointed out that with the trend, consumer finances are deteriorating. They're strong, but they're trending in the wrong direction for these reasons that, we discussed. And it's probably becomes a problem around the middle of next year when they start to run down savings or start to hit the limits of, the credit that's available to them. And, and so that's why it's interesting that other things, indicators that we might look at suggest, that second, third quarter next year is really going to be probably the peak or the worst of the economic decline that lies ahead.
Jesse, how does this all filter into the markets? Because we continue to see this trend of a very orderly bear market for almost everything. The dollar has stayed relatively strong. Bond market has followed the rest of the markets, which means that yields have continued to creep higher. It's all been orderly. If we do reach that point, say mid next year, is that when a crash comes into play? Do we need to deal with another 6 to 9 months of tough, orderly bear market action?
Well, I think right now we're, to me, the macro fundamentals are still very bearish, right? We haven't valuations. Essentially, I think there's, we're probably going to have two phases of this bear market. This first phase, obviously, fundamentals haven't deteriorated. The story of this, the first part stage of the bear market is just rising interest rates, rising dollar, these types of things, pressuring valuations and valuations coming down from whatever it is, 22 times earnings to 15, 16 times earnings on the S&P. And that's just repricing based on what interest rates have done. But the second half of the bear market or second phase is probably going to be this fundamental deterioration. If we go into recession, if we go into, see a decline in earnings, a significant decline, which I think is probably, ahead, the next phase of the bear market is going to be driven more by that fundamental deterioration. And, it could be just as painful as this first stage. The thing that, I look at right now is that those fundamentals aren't deteriorating as rapidly as bearish sentiment might indicate it should be. And at the same time, there have been over the last couple of weeks a lot of tactically bullish signals for stocks. I mentioned sentiment has become really, really bearish, positioning very bearish. We've seen so much volume in put options. Futures markets show massive, net short position in equity futures. And momentum has been waning on the downside. There's been some kind of bullish trend exhaustion signals in the short term that, we kind of saw around June, July timeframe before that rally. So there's also the seasonal factors too that come into play, not just annually, but also around the midterm elections. And so there's some bullish kind of short-term dynamics that need to play out over the next couple of months and could help stock prices see another bear market rally in the short run. But I do think the bear market's not anywhere near over just yet.
Well, Jesse, let's talk about the other thing that could be coming in 2023, even though it's been talked about all 2022, and that is the potential of a recession getting worse. You had put out a piece last weekend that talked about the worst market in a century, and it was kind of noting the performance of stocks and bonds, the traditional 60-40 portfolio, the worst in 100 years. But there was also some information in that piece you put out from Paul Tudor Jones about the potential that the recession could be here, could be in a couple months, and that the teens, you know, were the period where central banks experimented and tinkered with things. But now in the 2020s, it's really going to be about policy decisions to drive things. I'd love you to expand on that idea.
Well, I think Paul Tudor Jones made the point in a CNBC interview that, every decade we've kind of gone through a different driving force. The decade leading up to now was really the decade defined by extreme experimental monetary policy, pushing the limits, fiscal limits. How much can we actually spend? How big can we allow the deficits to get before we run into problems? And, you know, how much of that can the central bank explicitly monetize, right? I mean, that we saw this during the pandemic. The Fed explicitly monetized about $5-6 trillion worth of stimulus. And so that was the past decade. This next decade, because we're at over 120% debt to GDP here in the United States, and inflation is becoming a problem, we're going to, you know, be paying the price for that. And so it means that and we saw this in the UK in the last couple of weeks, right? Fiscal policy hits its limits. And the central bank, the Bank of England, says, hey, that's too much, you guys. You cannot do this, because it will force us to abandon our plans for trying to rein in inflation in favor of maintaining financial stability. Essentially, we have to come in and rescue the bond market when we're trying to fight inflation. We can't do both. So you guys have to rein in your fiscal plans so that we can fight inflation. And I think that that's not just a UK story. That's a story that's going to play out across, you know, the G10, essentially, is that, you know, debt is too high. Fiscal policy has reached its limits, and the central bank, you know, money printing has also reached its limits. And so we're now in the next 10 years are going to be defined by probably a period in which we have to find some fiscal restraint, and the central bank has to get back to some form of, more responsible monetary policy. And so what that means is inflation's probably going to be around for a while. It's not going to go back to below 2% in a hurry like markets currently expect. And like we saw over the last 10 years, inflation's probably now in kind of a systemic or a secular uptrend, where it's going to remain an issue for a fair amount of time, which is going to tie the hands of the central banks. They're not allowed to pursue the extreme policies that they have in the past 10 years. And it's also going to put a major damper on what fiscal policy can do. And so that's a huge paradigm shift from what we've gotten used to for the last 10 years.
That also sounds to me like we could be having generally higher rates than we saw in the past, where everyone seemed to race to zero or negative rates. And will that more directly hit more of those growth tech stocks? Will investors be searching more for value?
Well, I think yes. You're going to. I think this paradigm shift is huge. But the other thing I would point out, and that Paul Tudor Jones didn't necessarily talk about it specifically, but others have, is that inflation is a policy choice. Inflation, you know, when debt gets as high as it's gotten, like over 100% of GDP, you need inflation you have to inflate away the debt. That's what is going on right now. And I think that was the, you know, implied message from the Federal Reserve when they said, we're not going to target a 2% ceiling on inflation anymore. We're going to change our policy to shoot for a 2% average, meaning we want inflation above 2. That was a huge sign coming from the central bank saying we need inflation above 2% and we're going to tolerate it. And so I think we might have higher, we probably will have higher nominal rates for the next 10 years, but real rates are going to have to remain negative for a long period of time. And I just mean the nominal rate's going to have to be below the rate of inflation. And that's how we're going to address the debt problem. And so in that environment with negative real interest rates and policies that, a central bank that is right now pretending to rein in inflation, but still maintaining a deeply negative policy rate in real terms, you know, I think it really changes. It's a 180 degree shift. What you want to own in this environment is exact opposite of what you want to own for the past 10 years.
Well, Jesse, in addition to the higher rates that we've seen trending all year, the other big mover in the market has been the stronger U.S. dollar. And part of that's in relation to the very weak euro, yen, and pound, and they've all had challenges. But right now, the dollar continues to be the wrecking ball, hitting a lot of sectors, and it seems to be the one safe haven asset everybody's piling into. Do you see that theme changing at all in the near to medium term?
Absolutely. I think we are very close to a dollar peak. I've been a dollar bear for too long and looking for a reversal for too long, you know, to be honest. But we've seen in the last 2 weeks, we've seen two magazine cover indicators for the dollar. You had first Business Week put out, the dollar can't stop, won't stop ripping higher. The cover, you know, was a dollar sign just blasting through other currency symbols. And then you had Barron's run their own, the super strong dollar, where you had a, you know, super buff, basically George Washington on the dollar bill. And so, you know, these two publications are usually really, really good at timing, you know, major turning points for these things. I'm sure your audience remembers, you know, was it 2-3 years ago, Business Week ran the Is Inflation Dead cover with the dinosaur, and you know, the deflating dinosaur. And that was a perfect contrarian indicator for inflation, right? From that point on, inflation started ticking up and has only continued to accelerate higher. So to me, I think sentiment towards the dollar has become way overconfident, way over bullish. I mean, all the fundamentals point to reversing dollar. It's about as overvalued as it's ever been versus all of its cross currency relationships. You know, a lot of the fundamentals, trade and these things have rolled over hard. And so the dollar to me is close to a major turning point. It's going to take not necessarily a Fed pivot, but a Federal Reserve starting to talk about a pause. I think as soon as you start hearing the Fed back off the hawkish rhetoric at all and start talking about a pause, you're going to see a reversal in the dollar. And that's going to have important implications for every asset class.
Let's also talk commodities, because look, we've talked a lot about precious metals, and as bullish as some people have been, well, precious metals have been under pressure, just like the markets. Energy has been a bit of a standout this year, although it has pulled back from some of its highs. But a lot of what I'm reading about the oil market in particular is that, look, with the U.S. continuing to tap into their strategic reserves, that is not sustainable, and that market is still very tight. Natural gas has also pulled back from some of its highs, but a lot of people are expecting the winter season to pick up that demand. What are you most excited about when it comes to the commodity sector?
Well, I did put out a blog post last week from, you know, all of the long term, any way you want to look at commodities. We are in the very early stages of a new commodities super cycle. Most simplistically, just look at the price chart. You know, look at 100 years of, you know, the Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index. You get these decades where it trades sideways and then it breaks out to a new high. And that's about as clear as a signal you'd ever want that you're into a new bull phase. And that runs for, you know, about 10 years plus. And so what we've seen is the commodity spot index has traded sideways for the last 10 plus years. This year, it broke out to a new high and it's testing that breakout right now. And so I think to me, that's a very clear sign just technically that you want to buy dips in commodities. Fundamentally, you'd also just, you know, look at the fact that commodities are still dramatically undervalued relative to financial assets, relative to stocks and bonds. And the way that, CapEx has worked for the last 8-10 years, we've had massive underinvestment in virtually every commodity there is. That creates the supply constraints that are making oil prices shoot higher. Now, the oil price collapsed in 2014. And since that time, the investment in the sector has dropped dramatically. It became taboo in last year to literally to invest in fossil fuels. To me, that's so bullish for prices. You can't, because You know, if you're not investing in new supplies and demand is not going away, price has to go higher. So that's the dynamic that's going to drive commodities for the next, you know, 5-10 years. So I think the oil price is the one to pay close attention to right now because it's so closely tied to inflation. And to me, I'm looking at this administration and they're desperate to do whatever they can to keep the oil price from screaming higher. We've seen, you know, the largest release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve we've ever seen in history. It's like 10 times bigger than any release we've ever seen. We're back down to the lowest levels since it was created 40 plus years ago. Yeah, that's a one-time supply response that is a bullet that can't be fired again. And with diesel inventories right now, the lowest since, you know, in almost 100 years, distillates inventories, the lowest in 100 years, right? You're going to see problems. We're going to have energy shortages for as long as the eye can, you know, as far as the eye can see over the next, you know, few years. And that's going to, you know, that's a price trend that is just going to continue to move strongly higher. But I think it's true for all commodities, precious metals, energy, and base commodities too.
Well, Jesse, as we enter this area of 2023, where so many things are coming to a head, where the consumer may get tapped, where wage inflation may reach a breaking point with companies' earnings, where there's still the threat of a recession around the corner. And we've seen so many traditional ideas like the bond market, the 60-40 portfolio finally break down. What is your playbook for next year? What's your 2023 playbook? How are you going to be defensive but also offensive?
Well, I think, you know, what you want to, I think it's a combination of having these kind of macro themes, right? Commodity super cycle, but also using tactical tools to be smart in the short run with positioning, right? So it doesn't make sense to, you know, be buying even these things that are in a secular uptrend when sentiment becomes overly bullish. We saw that in energy earlier in the year, in the wake of the, you know, the onset of the war in Ukraine. Gold prices, energy prices really spiked, and you saw, you know, an incredibly euphoric bullish adoption of these things. I think right now we're seeing the opposite. I think, you know, people are giving up on the oil price and they're throwing in the towel on precious metals to a dramatic degree. I look at, you know, the 3-month rate of change in the gold ETFs, it's down about as low as it's been any time in the last 7-8 years, where we're seeing the assets in the last 3 months have, and that just follows price, right? Retail investors are giving up on gold, and you see that in the futures markets too for gold and silver. And so I think it's interesting to me that the time, you know, and everybody has said this. I think Stan Druckenmiller, Paul Tudor Jones, I mean, all these guys have come out and said, when you see the Fed pause, the gold price is going to take off. And I think we're getting close to a pause. I think the Fed's going to raise 75 basis points next month. And at that point, they're going to be close to 4% on Fed funds. And they're going to be talking about, you know, when it's appropriate to pause. And when that talk is going to be enough to see the dollar roll over, see precious metals, and probably oil prices too really start to take off again.
All right, Jesse, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for your comments and your assessment again so far on how this year has played out better than a lot of people thought that it would. We still have a couple more months to go here, but again, there are a lot of people calling for a crash, a deep recession already here. And it seems like somehow the economy, the consumer has been able to push that off. Next year will, of course, be interesting. But boy, oh boy, a full year of bear market action carrying over into year 2 in just a matter of months. A lot of people have been hurt in this market. Jesse, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again in a few weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.